distance. So, you know, you think you'd have a good connection, but sometimes you have high resistance. You'd have intermittency, you know, on the plug. You know, all of a sudden your power would go on and off, you know. But, so if you have an older car, you might have a problem, you know, getting good contact in that. But, you know, that's the way it was. Nowadays, you buy a car, you can't even straight. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, that's a very good point, Paul. I never smoked. My father, may he rest in peace, when I was 5 years old, gave me a lit cigar. That was the only thing I ever smoked in my life. So I had no practical experience. I did regularly as a child play with the cigarette lighter because I was fascinated by the glow. Usually my memories of the cigarette lighter were not particularly of carbon buildup. The ones that I saw had ash, but, you know, six to one, half a dozen to the other. That'll ruin your conductivity. So, yeah, that's probably a factor as well. That a used cigarette lighter adapter is probably not as useful as an unused one. So that's a good point, Paul. Thanks.
Okay, but you probably have to have a relatively old car. But, you know, something to think about if you have one of those. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, I'm sort of surprised there isn't some laser-guided mechanism for lighting people's cigarettes these days. I guess if smoking was still a big thing, Elon Musk would have built it into his Tesla.
Okay. Yeah, with the price you pay for those things, you could probably afford one of those lasers.
Yeah, well, apparently he's pulling out the infrared sensors from the autopilot detection mechanism, so he's shifting out of the infrared sensors.
Okay. No, no, they're all over here. I see it's all over. Every time I go out, I'll see a half a dozen now.
Okay, everyone else is getting into the business, so we'll see what runs out, the demand or the supply of lithium. Once again, I am Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra, ACTGS. My name is Roy, and this is the Limark Technical Mess. So we're out there ready to talk, discuss topics of interest. You comment on something that you heard before, you can comment on something that you asked in a previous technical net, and you went out and discovered the answer to the question. You know, whatever science related and such, feel free. Hit the push to talk button, give me your first name and your call sign.
W. Baker 2, Alpha Hotel Kilo.
Yes, what can I do you for?
Music stories, I guess. Back in the old days, when I was younger, around 18 years old, I used to buy used cars. One of my first used cars was a 53 or 54 packet 6-volt system. And back in those days, the generators were only able to put out around 25 amps at 6 volts. And the car that I bought, had a cigarette lighter, of course, but I didn't smoke, but it had electric windows. And I wound up having to have an extra storage battery in the trunk and jumper cables, because every time I lowered the windows and raised them, the battery wouldn't be able to start the engine anymore. It killed the battery. So back in those days, they had all these electrical devices, but they didn't have the generating capacity to keep the battery charged. So that's what I had to do in the old days, carry an extra battery. If I somehow or other opened the electric windows on the car and closed them again, I couldn't start the car. And it wasn't a defect. It was just that as the car aged, it took more amps to open and close the windows.
Yeah, that was before they called bugs the features. But yeah, probably just the efficiency of the motors. The lubricant started to fail, and the amount of power required to crank them up and crank them down was just too much. for the design of that car. So that's interesting. I didn't think electric windows went that far back.
WB2HK. They had air conditioning in the Cadillacs in the 40s, like 1942. They had the whole air conditioning system in the trunk. They had a lot of stuff back in the old days, but they didn't have, as I said, the capacity and the generators to keep up with the load.
I wonder if that was a technological problem or a cost effectiveness, where the price of everything factored in, they weren't prepared to spend the extra money that would mark the price up even higher. But I wonder what the reasoning behind it. They had to have the technology to build the better generators and such. So I wonder what the limiting factor in that particular situation might have been. Certainly, Ed. Offer your perspective.
They definitely had DC generators that could handle any load. I think it was a matter of size of the generator on the engine, cost that went with it, and stuff like that. I don't think it was a technological thing. I think it was a matter of size, weight, and cost.
Okay, I that makes sense, I guess. I would imagine that if you needed more space, you just build it out. Were the front of old cars kind of tightly put together? No extra space there?
I have a specific reference for you.
Okay.
Let me say, back when I was a kid, a typical passenger car that did not have a big V8. You know, just small V8, an inline six, no air conditioning. They were pretty empty. But I remember once, I don't know, what was I about? 20, I guess this was like, you know, mid-60s. And I was working part-time occasionally on and off at the gas station. And one day, a guy bought a Lincoln Continental. With some kind of a problem, and the mechanic opens up the hood to take a quick look. Well, it's still, you know, outside by the gas pump. And I couldn't help but notice, I still remember my reaction. It's like they opened the hood, poured in the engine and accessory parts till it was full, and slammed the hood shut. So, yes, the answer was very, very, very much, it depends.
Okay, very good, Ed. That's certainly a good answer. You know, we've been talking about a whole bunch of different things, and I've repeatedly commented that the answer kind of depends on the model and everything. So, yeah, makes sense.
Hey, I remember that thought. They put in parts of the spool and slammed the hood shut.
Okay, well, I guess that's their idea of a deluxe device. Everything that there's room for, they put. Because I guess their market, the guy will pay for it.
On the other hand, today that's much more common. A lot of cars need that description today.
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of things. The one thing that confuses the heck out of me is the rare occasion where gaudy manufacturers of trinkets will encrust diamonds or some nonsense on a cell phone, and usually it takes them so much time to do that that the cell phone they've encrusted is technologically obsolete. And yet, you know, because they've encrusted diamonds for some weird reason, you know, they put a price tag of, you know, $50,000. I tend to think that these guys simply do it for the public relations, because I can't imagine people being quite that dumb, but you never know.
Never underestimate the ability of spending their money just to show.
Yes. As a matter of fact, you could find 10,000 YouTube. There's this one guy in Hollywood. It has to be Hollywood, right? Who's supposedly a music producer who I've never heard of, who basically does a lot of YouTubes where he says, this is my $10 million watch. And, you know, I'm going to a jewelry store that has over $1 billion of inventory. And, of course, that's in Hollywood. So, yeah, there's a lot of showy people out there, and there's apparently enough guys who make a lot of money, not because they have brains, who then turn around and spend it on what to me and possibly to you is nonsense.
Yeah, and I've seen it up close and personal. It's a rather personal story, but it doesn't matter. All the people involved are either dead or long gone. You ready?
Sure.
Once upon a time, my long deceased now father-in-law met the husband of one of my wife's friends. And this fellow, for some reason, thought he would impress the older gent by showing his watch and telling him how much it cost, in the thousands of dollars. And the older gent was mortified.
Well, you know, it's a different sensibility. You know, there's a great line that I always get wrong, that people spend money they don't have to impress people they don't like. And it goes on and on. It's much more witty than it sounds from what I'm stammering through. But people, you know, it's kind of, there's another old joke of the guy who parked a grand piano outside of his house, and his neighbor asked why the heck he parked it outside. It's going to get ruined in the rain. And he told his neighbor that, well, if he put it in the house, no one would be able to tell that he owned a grand piano. So, you know, people are weird, but a couple thousand dollars for a watch is next to nothing. You know, that's almost inexpensive watch at this point. They have these massive things that I would never put on my wrist because it would probably weigh me down, where there are globes of the earth rotating and all kinds of absurd things going on. And jewelers have no problem asking millions of dollars for these things. You know, even Seiko, which is a relatively not insane company, sells high-end watches that go up to about $10,000. Again, that's much cheaper than Rolexes and these upper-tier absurd models that are in the millions.
Well, listen, keep in mind, this was over 30 years ago, and there's been a fair amount of increases in prices since then.
Yeah, that's true. I remember I was watching, it was one of those PBS type shows where you show the guy your valuables that either you bought when you were young or you inherited, and he tells you whether you're wealthy or poor. And there was this one nice guy who had this story that he bought a Rolex watch back in he was in the Navy or something, and it was during the Vietnamese War, and he spent an inordinate amount of money buying it. I think it cost him maybe $1,000 at the time. And the auctioneer told him that nowadays he could probably get a couple of hundred thousand for it because it was a mint condition. He had never taken it out of the case, and he hadn't filled out any of the forms and such. So, Yeah, things were cheaper back then, but then people didn't get paid that much back then either. You know, a decent wager, no one in their right mind would take a decent wager from 1960 today. You know, you could get more money slinging McDonald's.
I have an interesting fun fact about watches.
Please share.
If you happen to have a time machine, I have a fantastic profit-making deal. I might even pay you for the development of the time machine. Buy yourself a whole batch of modern, inexpensive watches, and you go back to the 1720 and the British Admiralty, which made you rich beyond your wildest dreams, put them out on their ships to be able to accurate longitude. The problem was they understood longitude. The thing with longitude is you had a clock that would maintain time over a long sea voyage, and they just didn't have them. So the British Admiralty would have given, and a lot of people were dying in accidents and stuff like that. A lot of British ships were being sunk, lost, dying, because of incorrect, you know, longitude determination. Not latitude, longitude. And a common $30 watch would have been absolutely priceless today, would have been absolutely priceless then.
Well, yeah, that's quite true. Matter of fact, that's one of the things that drove timepieces to become more accurate and changed all kinds of secondary places. The train stations were able to become synchronized. And sometimes, there was a great show. I think it was Jacob Bronowski did this thing called Connection, which I might have that name wrong, but yeah. Connections on how things are connected to each other that you don't that you've lost track of through time, and one of them was maritime functions and the precise timekeeping. Another was every so often we'll go off on a tangent about quantum mechanics. One of the earliest things that indicated quantum mechanics as a thing was black body radiation, and Planck's equation was basically driven by the light bulb industry. They wanted to know the spectral emissions of a filament given its illuminated temperature. So there's a lot of things with very interesting histories. Timepieces are particularly amazing, astounding. They're still working on different technology. There was a time back in the 60s, I think it was, might have been Seiko, it was a Japanese company, when the first quartz movement came out, they thought it was going to destroy the mechanical watchmaking industry, and apparently not. It kind of killed the low end, but the high end survived, and they seem to be thriving even economic downturns.
There's no practical reason for that. That's all, just going like
that. Yeah, but ego is very important. And if there's one thing that, one group of people that still need their egos massaged regularly, it's filthy rich people. The poor guys don't particularly need to have their ego massaged. And, there's not much money in it. But rich guys definitely.
Actually, I've fallen into that. I will pay absolute top dollar for dental floss.
Everyone has their price, eh?
No, I found out for twice the price of stuff that doesn't work at all. I mean, you have dental floss, I'm very happy with. There, I don't mind going to the top of the line.
Okay, yeah, I could understand that. Usually the least expensive stuff has some inherent flaws. Sometimes not, but sometimes. I generally speaking, tend to go for the second or the third technology or type of thing that's graded. Because the prime one usually tends to be overpriced. And eventually, if I wait long enough, I'll read a news article saying that most of them are fake, like extra virgin olive oil. There was a big article at one point where something like 70 to 80% of extra virgin olive oil is not pure. And the same thing goes, unfortunately, with multivitamins, which is a multi-billion dollar industry. Every so often, you'll read a report where some news company takes samples and has them tested in the lab, and the results are rather sad.
That brings up a serious medical question.
Sure.
I'm really not sure that the entire vitamins are just kind of overhyped.
Yeah.
When somebody is having a vitamin deficiency, sure. But for normal use, I think most of the time it's just overhyped. Here's one. My optometrist told me to buy an over-the-counter put vitamin in quotes. Preservision Arids 2. It's supposedly vitamins that have been shown in tests help with eye problems. They said I'm showing some signs of possibly long-term development of, can't think of the name, but you know what I'm talking about. And this has been shown to be macular degeneration. And this has been shown to be very good for that. But it's basically a vitamin. You, A, know anything about the preservation. Arid food is an acronym for a study. And this the exception or what?
WA2VFM.
Yes, VFM.
Good evening. This is Stuart. Arid 2 has been proven to significantly assist in the treatment and progression rather of wet adult macular degeneration. It contains zinc, I think vitamin C, there's some other ones I can't pronounce, but I had developed dry AMD. Dry AMD, there is not terribly a terrible disease, but there's no treatment for it. Then I progressed to the form called the wet AMD, where there is some treatment, but the chance of blindness is much more severe. I started on a regimen of ARIDS 2, as you're referring to, and the vascularization behind the retina completely disappeared. The wetness in the eye and the macula completely disappeared. I swear by ARIDS 2, as do probably hundreds of thousands of people. So it isn't just the vitamin.
Okay, thank you, Stuart. As Stuart mentioned, some vitamin supplements are beneficial. Most of them, unfortunately, are kind of snake oil. And there have been early studies that demonstrate benefits and later studies that equivocate endlessly. If you've ever visited a urologist, eventually, as I think still to this day, they kind of push something called salt palmetto. None of the studies I've really read documents anything significant. Ultimately, for many of these things, the risks are near zero. The costs are nominal, and the benefits are different stages of possible. The particular vitamins you mentioned, I think Dick, K2RIW, mentioned about 4 or 5 years ago. He was on that type of medication as well. So, yeah, there are some, quote, vitamins, end quote. In the case of for macular degeneration, they're not only vitamins, they're mineral supplements. They're a cocktail. So at this point, it seems very possible, but there are a lot of other things where they suggest supplements for memory loss. They suggest the supplements for all kinds of things where there's ultimately nothing behind them. So, you know, fortunately for the vitamin industry, there are a few islands where this stuff is effective. So, unfortunately, it comes back to what you previously said. It depends.
Comment.
Yes.
Comment.
Yes, feel free to comment.
Roy, this is Katie 2 UAH. I just wanted to make a comment that you mentioned about salt palmetto. I'll let it drop. I read a study about 10 years ago that it's interesting that salt palmetto can artificially lower the PSA. So when one goes to a urologist and has their PSA, the PSA can be artificially lowered, but it doesn't mean that it cured prostate cancer or even prevented it. It just lowered the number. So it can give the person a false sense of security. I got to look that back up in the literature. You might want to look at it, but it's interesting because it lowers the number but doesn't do anything else other than that. Back to you, Roy, in the net.
I have a question for you.
Okay, Ed?
I always thought that maybe I have been grossly misinformed, but salt palmetto was a medication that was supposed to reduce swelling of the prostate blocking urinary flow and nothing else. Can you read that into your answer, Roy?
Okay, there was a lot of hyperbole about saw palmetto as lessening the rate of increase in size of the prostate. Prostate is sort of like a donut-shaped object with your urethra going through the hole in the donut. And over time, most guys' prostate tends to grow bigger. It grows bigger on the outer aspect of the donut. It grows bigger on the inner aspect of the donut. The outer aspect, as long as it doesn't produce cancerous lesions, it won't give anyone any problems. When it impacts on the whole of the donut, it impacts upon the urethra, which is the method that most men use to empty their bladder. So that could have a severe impact. So, yeah, one of the indications was to decrease the rate of prostate growth. Again, ultimately, research kind of is kind of like shrugs their shoulder. I have not read of anything definitively to demonstrate these claims either. But because saw palmetto was relatively cheap and completely harmless, just about every urologist threw it in with his set of recommendations.
WA2ZS again.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm in accord with you. I'm in agreement with you that the majority of vitamins are of no benefit, except in a situation where there's a vitamin deficiency. With regard to the prostate, there are things called alpha blockers, which act to reduce the size of the gland and therefore reduce the PSA. But there's so many nonspecific causes of inflammation of the prostate that impact upon PSA levels. We now look at other things called free PSA and total PSA and come up with a number. But other than something like an alpha blocker or other hormonal treatments, medical treatments, it's a crapshoot thinking that some vitamins may or may not help.
Yes, I agree with you. Medication usually tends to be more effective. Some people don't want to take medications. Medications can have either real or perceived side effects. And so because the information was, the paucity of information about saw palmetto was so minimal, urologists felt that it was a relatively safe thing. If it didn't help, it would probably take 5-10 years of research to prove it one way or the other, and worse, you were out a couple of bucks for those saw palmetto pills. But no, I agree with you. Medication tends to be more effective. And of course, the reason why vitamins became so famous was because the terrible things that happened with malnutrition and other malabsorption syndromes where people required extra vitamins. B12 deficiencies, vitamin C deficiency gave you scurvy, and everyone knows the story about sailors dying, and finally they stored up lemons to give to the sailors and such. So obviously, if you have a malabsorption problem, vitamins are incredibly important and necessary as a supplement. But for most of us, it just gives you expensive urine.
And also, in situations where people have some type of disorder or disease, for example, there's the calcium coming off of the spine, demineralizing, as it's called, people can be given magnesium supplements, calcium supplements, this, that, and the other thing. So there is some benefit to vitamins and minerals when there is a specific pathology, if you will. But as you say, it doesn't hurt. Just pay the price. Sometimes it's purely an idiosyncratic thing. People feel better when they take the vitamins.
Here's one for you. Ever hear of vitamin Q as a Quebec?
There is something called coenzyme Q, but that's the closest that I could get to a thing that would be kind of broken up and someone would call vitamin Q.
A lot of older hams have worked on World War II era radio equipment might recognize the term spray vitamin Q capacitors, which was supposed to be a big thing that came out in World War II. It turned out it was entirely hyped to be used by.
Okay, I hope it was successful.
That part I don't know.
Yeah, I mean the problem is that if you pay too much attention, there are miracle food supplements every other day, and you can get busy listening to the absurd claims that are made with all kinds of things. As I said, the multivitamin industry is a multi-billion dollar one. They make a heck of a lot of money, and there's always questionable people out there trying to bring some exotic food from another continent and discovering the magic nature of its oils, etc. Up until recently, people had to deal with Dr. Oz's nonsense of promoting these things.
Roy, wasn't he actually very well respected about 20 years ago before he went down that rabbit hole?
Yes, he was a Columbia cardiothoracic surgeon. That's a high-end profession. He was respected by his fellow physicians. He did have a little quirkiness. He was kind of interested in alternative medicine schemes. And, you know, there's an old joke of what do you call an alternative medicine that works? You call it medicine. So he had this penchant way back, and he was very clever, and he was very motivated to make a buck. So he kind of went down the left-hand side. He took a turn to the dark side of the force and decided to promote patent medicines. And, you know, there's even a video footage of him in the house basically saying that there's no magic cures for anything. And then they put up footage of his television show where he talks about magical cures for things. So, yeah, he turned to the dark side of the force. Well, to me it's a shame. To him, probably, he looks at his bank account. The story is that he's got a couple hundred million dollars in the bank. You know, him and Deepak Chopra, they've made a lot of money basically screwing up medicine.
I know this is totally unrelated, but can I say something?
Certainly, Ed.
I've always told my kids, money is the most important thing. So you have a roof over your head and food on the table. And the further you get above that threshold, the less money really is meaning. Better off having a meaningful life with less money than a meaningless life with a lot of money. Apparently, I have a minority opinion.
I hope that isn't the case, Ed, because I agree with you. Even back in the old days, I remember when the internet was a young thing and microcomputers were relatively new, and all the young entrepreneurs out there, their dream was to make their first million. Then they were probably the healthiest people. Then they were going to just retire and enjoy life for the rest of it. It sounds a little bit self-indulgent at this point. But, you know, there are people out there that the 1 million leads you to getting 2 million, leading to 4 million, leading to 8 million. You know, I question guys like Elon and Bezos and these other people of how many billion are enough. And I think, unfortunately, the answer is there is no such thing as enough. And, you know, perhaps they're having a great life. Perhaps they're having a miserable life. Maybe they're trying to shove these billion-dollar bills into some hole in their being that doesn't get filled with anything, including billions of dollars. But, you know, in a way, I feel sorry for them. I mean, does Jeff Bezos really need a second yacht to take care of his first yacht? You know, sometimes ridiculous spending gets ridiculous. Oh, well, I guess we've depleted this particular subject. Anyone have any questions or topics of interest? We got a half hour before usually the space semester starts. So anyone with any questions, give me your first name and your call sign.
WHVFM, Stu. I just had a comment. We're talking about uber rich and what have you. I would surmise that people who make these millions and billions think of it as an accomplishment. I have friends who are in medicine and law, and they made their first million, and then they said, wow, this is great. I can't wait till I'm successful and I have a second million. Before you know it, they had 10, 12, 15 million. But I also can't quite comprehend, if you're living way below your means, the only satisfaction you can get in having a great deal of wealth is what I call financial security. And of course, if you have many, many, many millions of dollars and you never spend anything near what you have, you'll always have financial security. But we all have to concentrate on the non-material aspects of our lives. That is key. And it's good to have a great deal of financial security, if you will, but the non-materialistic things in life are the things that matter even more.
I have a comment.
Okay, Ed?
Don't get worried, Stu. I'm agreeing. My son was, I guess, about 10 or so, and a play day has been set up for classmates in school. Go over and play at his friend's house for a while. And I don't remember the details, but I remember I dropped him off, and this was a very, very impressive house. And I just dropped him off and left, and my wife did the pickup later. And when we got home and we spoke and everything, my wife said it was a very fascinating experience. Well, because our son said to his mother, he picked up that this kid was so impressed by how much time my son's dad, spent with him, because his father spent almost no time with him. This huge house, you know, he's never in this house. And I thought about it, and that isn't totally backwards, I dare you to say what it is.
I think that just confirms my supposition that the non-materialistic things are things that matter most. Rich or poor, it's good to have money. There's no doubt about that. But money does one thing. It pays your bills.
Hey, man, it tends to, if you follow them all back, Bill Gates, it's all nonsense. They're all upper middle class. They're upper class guys. They all went to prestigious, you know, private institutions of learning. But I think to a degree they lacked the social interaction with their parents, who were very successful and very public people. And that deprivation, I think they use money to shovel into that hole. So I think it's unfortunately a very common thing. If you have your motivation screwed up, and you don't understand what the true valuable aspects of your life are, and you just put them down to cash, it's an endless cycle. It's an endless race that you never win at. But I think it's very difficult for these people to make those connections, especially with their family. They either come from isolation, they certainly spread it around. So although I would agree with you, Ed, and you too, Sue, I think that financially very successful people tend to err on the side of filling that void with just bank accounts.
Let me see if I have it. I had a cousin who was a very prominent internist on Community Drive in Manhasset. And he, this is in the days of private practice, not being an employee of a hospital. And he worked umpteen million hours a week. And he was loved by everybody. He was right near North Shore Hospital. But it got to a point where he would be in the office at 7 a.m. and come home 10 o'clock at night. And one day his wife called him from their vacation home in Vermont. And she said to my cousin, "I've taken the kids who were up in the Vermont house. If you want to see us again, you have to give up your practice." And he did. So it's very easy to lose sight of stuff like this. I mean, I'm very, very close with a neurologist here in town who he makes multi-zillions and zillions of dollars working 18 hours a day, 6 days a week. And I won't tell you what subspecialty he has, but he has no life whatsoever. He lives in a 9,000-square-foot house in Lloyd Harbor, and it's just he and his wife. And I asked him one day, "How is it living in a 9,000-square-foot house?" And he really had no answer. He said, "It's just like any other house. So I can't comprehend." But as we all said, the non-materialistic things are the most important things.
Yeah, agreed. But for some people, they're just not capable, or they find themselves on these weird races to the top of the hill. And they have to prove stuff to themselves or to others, God knows. It's an art among in itself to find a true balance with your life. And occasionally people are successful and are able to do that. I knew a neurologist who definitely knew how to have a good time. I mean, he probably didn't have close contact with his children. He had multiple marriages, but he certainly didn't seem to work terribly hard. He made a good amount of money. He spent a good amount of money. He seemed to be happy, but you never know. But you know, to find balance in your life, I think they should sort of try and teach that in school if it's actually possible.
By the way, the neurologist that you're referring to, just curious if his last name begins with the letter H or not.
No, it begins with an S.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that. Anyway, I want to thank you for some interesting conversation. I think I'm losing my voice here, so thank you for allowing me to chime in. I wish everybody a pleasant evening. And speak with you gentlemen later on. Have a pleasant night, everybody. WA2VFM.
Okay, very good, Stu. You're always welcome here. We appreciate participation. Any other points you want to make, Ed, about this? It's a great kind of philosophical, you know, kind of a, it affects everyone, because everyone that I know of has to find a balance in their lives. A lot of times people just fall into an imbalance, I guess, is what goes on with them. But some of them are really obsessive. You know, when you start to collect billions of dollars, this goes far beyond the concept of financial security. You know, short of the world ending, I don't know what an extra $1 billion really buys you, other than a damn another yacht.
Well, I'm afraid by asking me, Roy, you're answering the wrong person. I've thought about this for decades, and I never came up with an answer to that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I have been hard on education since I was in elementary school, and no one bothered to teach me long division. I went from nothing to short division. So I don't know. I've had some very good teachers. I've had some very bad teachers. I had one woman who taught me the nuances of the emergency escape mechanism of skis for some strange reason in fourth grade. I never skied, never used the emergency ankle release, but I knew it existed. I didn't know about long division, but I knew about escape mechanisms. But I really think schools should teach things like just critical thinking, logic, and you know, regular values of how to kind of sketch the life that you want to live so that you can optimize it for yourself, and so that you don't tend to, what we all tend to do is just model ourselves many times after our parents and other relatives, and sometimes that could be very good, but in some cases it could be very bad.
Something to be to the AD has to gently disagree.
Feel free.
Make no mistake. In principle, I agree with you, host. But specifics. If you're going to have to go down a ridiculous rat hole, quick-release e-bikes are a fantastically clever thing. Very, very impressive engineering exercise. So, there is a lot to be learned from that, although I must admit, if given a choice between that and learning how to be a good citizen, of course that takes second place. But if you're going to waste your time on nonsense, that's not a bad example of productive nonsense.
Well, as I mentioned, in that case, I learned about the escapement mechanism instead of long division. I think long division would have served me a little bit more at the time in fourth grade.
No argument there.
Yeah, but I took education. You know, there are good people. There are good teachers. There are effective teachers. There are ineffective teachers. Unfortunately, there's not enough demand in education to strictly test and get rid of the questionable ones. Unfortunately, especially in the last 10, 20 years, when fortunately, women could get jobs as doctors and lawyers and everything, they stopped kind of gravitating often into education. So there's less demand, there's less money in it. I think people don't appreciate the importance of education. Education can make or break people. For all my nasty comments about teachers, my science teacher in high school, Mr. Zuckerman, may he rest in peace, was a fantastic science teacher. And to this day, I'm not quite sure if I would be as involved in science if I had never met him. But for every Mr. Zuckerman, there's at least 10 other teachers who probably ruined my interest in Spanish languages and literature and all kinds of unfortunate things. So, I don't know. Education is a very difficult subject. Back in the good old days, John, WB2, I forgot John's call sign. BKB and Wesley would discuss education, and every so often I would drop by and throw my 2 cents in.
Only 2 cents?
AJ2AK, mobile.
Yes.
You're having an interesting conversation. I'd like to share my 3 cents there.
Suddenly.
Why, thank you. Actually, what you're saying about bad teachers is very true, because if I didn't have a bad teacher in my technical college, I would be an electronic engineer right now.
I'm sorry to hear that, because, I have had, unfortunately, disinterested or confused people or just downright not great teachers. And I understand they could basically just step on your interest and just turn it into something tedious and tiresome and just kill your spirit. So I'm sorry to hear that.
As someone who had a very rocky electrical engineering education, I'm intrigued.
Well, the thing was, I went to a technical institute for a year and a half, and I had one, I think it was electronic theory 2, I think the class was, and every time we had a kind of difficult question for him to answer, but he would say, well, that's how it is, and he would, another thing that turned me off is that he used to use profanity with his class, so, you know, it kind of, like, turned me off. Yeah, sure, Ed.
That's the way it is translated to. I have no clue, leave me alone. Profanity, some said, I'd love to answer that. Let me make an outrageous comment. Please do not blame me. I think if you really had that fire in the belly, would have worked around. I was never in that white situation, but that was as close as I can. I did work around it. Now, I could be wrong, I could be completely wrong, but I think what it is, it shows that your heart really wasn't in it as much as you thought it was. Again, I'm just spitballing here. I'm not saying anything.
Well, yeah, you could be right, because I was young and dumb and, you know, wanted to party and do other things. So, yeah, I know it was partly my fault, but, you know, it's just, that's one of the things that put me in a negative mood about it, I guess.
Yeah, I agree, but my point is, my experience, and I've seen it with my kids in some cases, life puts up stuff like this, and it's a test of just how serious are, and it might actually have been the best that maybe realize you really weren't that driven to fight your way over this cliff.
Well, you're partly correct. But I have a good job now with the city, and not in electronics, but I can still keep that as a hobby. So, you know, I'm happy with how my life ended up. You know, I'm got a good job, nice wife, good house. So, you know, things worked out, I guess.
Are you familiar with Neil deGrasse Tyson?
I'm sorry, I didn't get that. What'd you say?
There is a quasi-celebrity around named Neil, N-E-I-L, DeGrasse, D-E-G-R-A-S-S-E, Tyson, T-Y-S-O-N.
Oh, yes, I love that guy. I got a couple of books by him also. Yeah, I like him.
A black kid from the slums in the Bronx works his way up to a PhD in astrophysics and then becomes one of the world's most famous, if not the world's single most famous astronomer. I shudder at the thought of the garbage he had to fight his way through, because he had that fire in his belly, that drive that would have killed you or me.
Well, that's true. So, you know, you know, some people have it, some people don't, and, you know, God bless the people who do.
I mean, I don't mean to denigrate your experience at all, and apparently you came up with a very good life despite it.
Yeah, well, but, you know, you were talking about education, and I thought I'd just put in my 2 cents.
Everybody has a few lousy teachers. I did, you did, I did.
Go ahead, you're the other station.
Roy, I think it's your turn.
Okay, very good, AC2GS. I tell you,
I don't know if I had fire in my belly. Neil deGrasse Tyson is a highly motivated person, a highly aware of public relations and marketing and all kinds of things. And although he's one of the most famous astronomers, I thumbed through his PhD thesis. It's not like he's a working astrophysicist anymore. He spends most of his time explaining science, which is an interesting field. But I mean, I've had challenges in education. Sometimes you take them, sometimes you pass. I had an English class. The first session, the English teacher who was a graduate student had shared with me his belief that I was a Nazi. So having been challenged, I went over and dropped that English class and picked up another one from a same teacher. Yet on another time, I had a graduate level course on the spectroscopy of quantum mechanics in which the professor threatens us all that we have to solve Schrodinger's equation, and the next day half of the class dropped out of the class. But I stayed there just for the giggles and such. So some challenges I took, some challenges I just hit the ejection button. Some challenges are not worth dealing with.
My guess is that Schrodinger's equation thing was a bluff, or did you actually solve it?
No, we solved it. It's quite solvable for very, very simple hydrogen atoms. You plug in the simplest units, and you actually can get the wave function with those P orbitals and S orbitals and D and F and such. We didn't go up to the D or the F orbital, but yeah, you can actually solve it. It's kind of like a chemical / physicist version of climbing junior Mount Everest. It was fun. You know, I took it as a challenge, and I wasn't afraid, because the worst I could do is fail it. And it worked out for me. I think I got an A-minus for that class.
This is relevant to the conversation. The most interesting course I had in engineering, course I loved the most. I was glad that I passed.
Was it that challenging, or what was the reason?
The course consists of deriving things like waveguides, cavity resonators, starting with Maxwell's equations, and the math is I just found it academically magnificent, but so brutal. I'm glad I passed. I was thrilled to get it. 90% of the class. It was like 1A with B and the rest B.
Those were the good old days when there was no class curve and then a correction on the class curve where, no one got anything less than a B minus. There are cases, I read them every so often, after a lot of the pandemic isolation was discontinued, there were students who were so upset with a teacher's idea of what his grade curve should be that they refused to go to his class, and since he didn't have tenure, he ended up getting fired from the university.
Sorry. That noise you just heard?
There's apparently a feedback. I don't know if it's the IRLP node or the Echo node or the All-Star node, but I think one of the nodes is bleeding back into the signal, and it's producing just feedback. It climbs up to a certain point, and then it cuts off.
NY2H.
Yes, Lou, as our technical maven.
Yeah, hi. Apparently somebody's keying up on the Middle Island machine and listening on the other machine. I can drop the link if they persist.
That's not why I brought it up. Can I get my point?
Certainly, Ed.
I am detecting there a multi...